Your name, please?
I'm Earl Brill.
And your occupation and position?
Episcopal chaplain at the American University in Washington, D.C.
Father Brill, there are close to 200 million people in the United States today, and only about half of them go to church. Do you have any opinion why this should be?
My viewpoint is that it would be a real surprise to find that there were any more than that, because there never have been in American history, and about 50% of the population is as many as we've ever had as being members of churches, synagogues, and temples.
This is Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with Earl H. Brill, who will reveal to you what he holds to be the responsibilities of his position in life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a public service by this station. Mr. Kennedy's guest today is Earl H. Brill, Episcopal chaplain at American University in Washington, D.C., and author whose current Seabury Press book is The Creative Edge of American Protestantism. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series, Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Father Earl H. Brill. Why do you suppose that people don't want to belong to the church as such? Is it, are they against organized religion, or aren't they religious at all?
I think there are a lot of people who consider themselves as religious, but don't see much point in organized religious enterprises, partly because I guess Americans have always been rather individualistic and think that their basic commitments and attitudes toward the world are held in private.
And what's wrong with this attitude, if anything?
Well, it rejects the whole corporate dimension of Christian faith as I would see it. It has some validity to it, certainly, because the fundamental basis of religion, I think, is man's own inward dispositions. But it has to find its external form, and I think Americans tend to underwrite the external forms.
Well, is the point of worship, as organized religion have it, to make a person a better person?
Always surprises me to find how meaningful it is to people whose religious convictions sometimes very shaky. That is, a person who's had very little to do with the church or with religion. I notice this on a college campus particularly. We have a whole generation of students who are brought up in homes with no religious training at all. And when they want to find out something about the Christian faith or the Jewish faith, first thing they're likely to do is to look in on worship. Always surprises me. I would assume they'd go off and read a book about it or something like that.
What's their reaction when they go in and look on worship at this point in their lives?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think this really tells you where a person is, because the reactions are not uniform at all. What strikes them as most meaningful is that here is a community worshiping like they mean it. It's not the form or the absence of form or the aesthetic part of worship that moves people the most, I don't think. I think it's this quality of conviction that communicates itself.
Well, now, does this corporate worship together then feed back in any way into daily life, or isn't this the purpose of it?
Well, we like to think so. You hear very often preachers complain that religion is merely a Sunday morning affair that doesn't have anything to do with Monday through Friday. But I have a feeling that we very often look for the directions in, or the connections in too direct and precise a way. I don't think you can predict what a man's religious conviction is going to prompt him to do on Monday morning. We very often have a set view of what we expect to have happen. We think that all religious people should be nice guys and terribly moral and never take advantage of anybody in business and always come out on the losing end of every deal. I don't think this is what the biblical faith calls us to do or be.
What do you think it calls us to do and be?
Well, it calls us to be faithful, but on the other hand, the Christian gospel is certainly the proclamation that God forgives you even if you don't. You know, the shocking statement of Martin Luther, sin boldly, but believe more boldly still. It's the kind of thing that Americans find very hard to take, because we are a works-oriented people. We like to see results. We want a religion that produces a certain set of results, and we're very often disappointed when it doesn't happen. And we don't realize that people go through life under pressures that they don't even know or understand. And as a result, they're never really faithful to the commitments that they make. That doesn't mean they're insincere. That just means they're poor human beings that aren't capable of doing what they know they have to do.
Do you think that the church should ever take a position as an organization to try to lobby or legislate or demonstrate or take part in the social affairs of the world?
Oh, that's a good question, particularly now, since the church has, in fact, been criticized for doing exactly this. On the one hand, it's something the church has to be very careful about. I think I would resent it if my parish priest told me how I ought to vote in a forthcoming election. But on the other hand, the church does have a responsibility to point to the ethical and theological dimension of issues, whether they be in politics or economics. And if the church can make a corporate witness and take an official organizational stand on a matter, then I think it's all to the good. It's one way of telling the world that the church really cares about the things that are important, things like war and peace and race and politics and business, education. These are all issues on which the church ought to have some positions, although I don't think its positions ought to be so specific and so cut and dried that we read people out of the church because they don't agree with them.
What, Father Brill, do you think have been the special positive contributions through the decades and even the centuries of Protestantism and Roman Catholicism?
Good question. I think that that in American history, Protestantism has been so much a part of the warp and woof of society that it's hard to single out the strands. Many of our commonly accepted social values today are merely secularized versions of values which were originally embedded in the society as part of our religious heritage.
For example?
Well, our doctrine of equality before the law stems out of the Christian doctrine that all men are equally children of God. I think our traditional American concern for social service, the conviction that we ought to do something to help those who are less fortunate than ourselves. I think our foreign aid program, even though it has its political uses, as it certainly should, even though it does serve the national interest, nevertheless has this altruistic side to it, which can't be underestimated. I think Roman Catholicism has made a very different kind of contribution. It has added, I think, to our concern for the poor and for the needy, and has also added to our understanding of the corporate dimension of Christian faith.
Do you think that there's any creative edge to the church in today's society?
Well, I think there is, despite the fact that a lot of people would complain to the contrary, that it isn't so. Protestantism takes a lot of criticism, mostly from Protestants. And while self-criticism is of the very essence of Protestantism, I have the feeling that for the last generation it's grown almost pathological. This is why I think it's important to single out the fact that that there has been a tradition of responsible interaction in Protestantism with the leading issues of contemporary society. The ministry of the church to the city. It's always been said that Protestantism has abandoned the city, and there's no doubt that historically we've had a nostalgic preference for the small town, but we've been carrying on a ministry to the city for over 100 years now. And I think this is something that people ought to know about. We haven't done a decent job in race relations in one respect, and the church still is a segregated body. But nevertheless, the activity of the churches and of churchmen in the recent civil rights movement certainly can't be under-evaluated either. So that there are these things going on, and it seems to me that if I were standing outside the church in the secular order, I would respond much more favorably to news about this side of the church's life than news about bigger and better buildings.
Father Brill, in your close work with young people today, what do you find to be the exciting new dimensions to their life that interest them?
They are, by and large, questioning their inheritance, I guess I would say. That is to say, we have given them a society which is quite affluent. We have given them all they need, and frequently a lot more. We have given them a wide range of experience, such as our generation never knew. We have protected them from any kind of threat of failure. We have seen that that they had it easy. And we have taught them by implication that this is all there is to life, that they ought to go to college, for example, and get their degree so they can join in the new secular technological society and make a good living and live in a nice house and produce fine, well-scrubbed youngsters that they can raise and protect and send off to college and do the same. Many of the more intelligent and sensitive of this generation are wondering whether it's all worth it. And a lot of the rebelliousness that you hear about is not rebellion against the real values of American culture, but rebellion against what they see around them in the name of the real values of American culture. I see a growth of a real ideology of democracy, for example, a real morality that insists that that life be authentic and that people live up to their commitments, that we not live this double standard of saying one thing and doing something else. Sometimes they're pretty intolerant of anybody over 25 who obviously isn't in the conversation. But I see this as a significant development among college-age students. I would have to add, though, that this doesn't mean all of them. Most people in any age are pretty ordinary and probably conventional and typical. But this is the new element that I see growing.
What are the satisfactions you get from your work?
Well, they say a college chaplain is like a skin specialist. Your patients never die and they never get well. Maybe that's one of the negative satisfactions anyway. No matter what comes or goes, it's a new troop every 4 years. I think what I find most satisfactory about the job is that I'm thrown in continually with a very alive and eager and thoughtful group of human beings. I appreciate the fact that I'm not taken for granted either. I'm not Father Brill who has all the answers. I'm just another jawbone, and they can take what I say or leave it alone. I can always tell the difference when I'm with a bunch of college students or when I'm with a bunch of churchmen. When I'm in a church group, I speak my piece and everybody says, "Yes, Father." And, "Are there any questions?" "No, Father." And if I'm in with a college group, I have to fight to get a word in edgewise. This is, I think, one of the real satisfactions of this job.
Thank you very much, Father Earl H. Brill, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with Earl H. Brill, produced as a public service by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church. Today's guest was Earl H. Brill, Episcopal chaplain at American University in Washington, D.C., and author whose current Seabury Press book is The Creative Edge of American Protestantism.